You are tuned to CKUW 95.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of Winnipeg and the City of Winnipeg on Treaty 1, on the historical territory of the Anishinaabe, the Nihiyawak, and the Nakota, the current home of the Dakota and members of the Dene and Inuit, also the homeland of the Red River Métis. My name is Michael Welch. For the past 6 weeks in this time slot, we've been airing clips and retrospectives on some of the vintage spoken word programs that have aired on CKUW over the past two decades. This is part of our 20th anniversary commemoration of our campus station switch to the FM airwaves as of midnight on April 30th, 1999. In the next hour, in order to cover as much ground as possible, we'll be reviewing not just one, but three long-running shows, two of which went to air in CKUW's inaugural month as a broadcaster. Stick around, because you won't want to miss a minute. One of the things that distinguishes community radio from commercial or state radio is the emphasis on giving more space to community voices and giving them a platform on a regular basis, and not just when a soundbite is necessary to complete a reporter's story. The program Inner City Voices exemplifies this principle, giving voice to our downtown residents. The show has been on the airwaves since CKUW's debut as an FM broadcaster and is still going strong after 20 years, making it CKUW's most long-lived, locally produced spoken word program. I had a chance to speak with the person who helped bring the show to air. She shared with us her recollections of the show's background, her favorite moments, and the show's important community role over its 20-year run.
This is Inner City Voices, the radio show on CKUW 95.9 FM, Campus Community Radio. Real people, real issues, real stories, coming from Winnipeg's inner city. My name's Erica Weeb. Yeah, I'm Erica Weeb. I guess I hosted the show from the onset of the show in 1999. I was working at the time as a community development worker right in this neighborhood where the University of Winnipeg is located. And the way that it evolved is that there had been a newspaper called Inner City Voices prior to the show. It was a very popular inner city newspaper, which eventually folded because of just funding restraints. And then when CKUW went to air, it was Steve Bates who approached me. Oh, the other thing was that we started a newspaper, a little local newspaper in the West Central neighborhood called West Central Streets. And it was very much a follow-up to Inner City Voice, the Inner City Voice newspaper, but it was also very much based on hearing the stories of the people who lived in the neighborhood. That was the really strong, strong principle of that newspaper. Steve Bates, who was working at the station at that time, was familiar with the paper, and I guess when they were looking for shows, he approached me and asked me if I would be interested in working on a show that would be sort of along the same lines as West Central Streets, the newspaper, i.e. that it would tell the stories of local people. And so that was very exciting to me, I remember, because I've always been a huge radio fan. And, of course, loved the idea of West Central Streets and what we were doing there. It was a little intimidating, too, because it was a completely new kind of field for me. And I remember I pulled together three or four other people who from the neighborhood. And we, for the first little while, there was a little committee of us that sort of tried to do it together. And we just figured, well, let's give this a shot and try it out. And it ended up lasting for quite a few years that way. Mm. And it's still going, we should say. The show is still going, so.
For sure. Yeah. What were some of the themes, the topics that you'd cover in those early days?
Well, again, we really tried our best to just provide a voice for people who lived in the local neighborhood. That wasn't always possible because, I mean, you have to have a guest once a week or at least one guest once a week. And so sometimes we would pull in people who worked in the neighborhood or worked in the inner city. Eventually it grew. Like, we didn't just focus on this neighborhood eventually. We just kind of tried to make it an inner city kind
and
of
as
a
this
show.
Will be rebroadcast this coming Friday morning at 10 o'clock. One issue of concern in some inner city neighborhoods is the whole thing about the sex trade. It's often a difficult thing to deal with in neighborhoods. There's strong opinions about it and lots of polarized points of view on the part of people who live and work in the areas that are affected by the sex trade. But I think that in any discussion about the sex trade, what's really important is to listen to those most directly affected by it, and that would be the sex trade workers. So I'm really pleased today that we have a young woman here with us who used to be a sex trade right here in the inner city of Winnipeg, and she wants to talk about that. She's asked to remain anonymous, and so we're going to respect that. But thanks a lot for coming today. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay. I think I'm just going to start by asking you why you're interested in talking about your experiences now. Why is that important to you?
So girls don't do it.
Uh-huh.
As much prevention as possible.
Right.
It's very dangerous work.
Right. And we'll get into that a little bit more. But so that's your main motivating reason, eh?
Yeah.
Okay. Because you feel like you might maybe be able to have an impact on other people, people's choices?
Yeah.
Great. Okay. How did you get involved in the sex trade in the first place?
My apartment was broken into and I didn't have any money and I had to pay my rent and my damage deposit. And my check was stolen when I had a square job and I didn't know what to do. And then there was this guy who wanted a wife for a while and I thought, oh, how great. I could do this. I was addicted right there. You know?
Addicted to the whole thing?
Yeah, the whole concept. I thought it was cool. Whatever. I'd make lots of money and it would be great. And,
yeah.
You know? Not likely, though.
Right.
You don't keep your money.
Aha, uh-huh, that's the thing about it, I guess. So, he wanted a wife. What do you mean?
I had to pretend to be his wife for a week. Like, seriously, pretend. It was very insane, but whatever. Needed the money. No, I would have no home if I didn't do it.
Right. So, did you kind of feel like, I'll just do this one thing and it'll tide me over?
Yeah.
Right. But what happened then?
And then I went to Toronto. And then money goes really fast there because rent is really expensive there. And life is very expensive there. Food's more expensive. Clothes are more expensive. Everything's more expensive. So my money went really fast. And I couldn't get a job. So I ended up back on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up getting a pimp and everything. It was just very terrible.
Well, I remember there was a few, out in my mind were... one with Virginia Miracle, and she was a grandmother who lived on Sherbrooke Street at that time. I've lost touch with her. I'm not sure where she is now. But she told the story of her grandson getting caught up in the justice system and how she and the mother of another young person who was also caught up in the justice system had sort of supported these two young men through this whole journey. And it was a really, really powerful show. I remember that was a really good one. I really appreciated her sharing that story. And then I also remember ones like Anna Weir, who lived on, I'm not sure if she still does, but on Langside Street. And her master's project was to purchase one of the last boarded up houses on Langside Street. And then she renovated it in the most sustainable possible way that she could with geothermal heating, I believe. Anyway, she came on and told the story of renovating that house and went through all the different steps of what she did to make it a really sustainable house.
On Langside Street. So Anna, how is this going to work exactly? What are the questions you're hoping to answer, and how do you think you're going to go about answering those questions?
Okay, basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out what the barriers are to sustainable design. And sometimes when I tell people that, they're like, well, why are you assuming that there are barriers to sustainable design? And to me, by just looking at the houses that we have, I can tell or I think that there are barriers to sustainable design. If there weren't barriers, some barriers somewhere, then we would have more houses that were sustainable. And so there are a number of things that can be barriers to sustainable design. It can be, you know, economics. Maybe sustainable design is really expensive. Maybe it's not something that people think about. Maybe the way that the structure is set up with the city, with permits and building codes, maybe that's a bit of a barrier to sustainable design. So there are a lot of things that we're trying to look into to see how we can promote sustainable design or how we can kind of overcome these barriers. So basically what we're doing is, I mentioned earlier, we're working with the Faculty of Architecture, and we're doing this as a design build class. So there are 9 Master's Architecture students, and the prof, Dean Severson, and the carpenter, who's working for the Faculty of Architecture. And together what we're doing is we're kind of going through the whole process together. We're deciding what we want to do, what we think is the most sustainable in this particular setting, in this particular house, and then the students the students will be designing it and they'll be helping me to renovate it. So that's kind of the process. I also mentioned that we're working with Winnipeg Housing, and Winnipeg Housing is, they're project managing, so they're giving us a lot of kind of input that they have from buildings that they've renovated in the area and just the things that need to be done to make sure that the house is, you know, good and livable and up to code and things like that. So basically, it's a fairly loose project or process in that we're trying to do this, and we're kind of seeing, okay, well, we want to put in a composting toilet. Is that going to be a problem with this city? Or we want to put in windows that are manufactured locally. How many different manufacturing companies manufacture windows locally in Winnipeg? So we're kind of going through all the steps and monitoring that and seeing kind of how easy it is.
So you're also talking about community economic development, as some of us would call it, like buying local, supporting locally produced products.
Yeah,
that's all part of what you're talking about.
Yeah, and it's a huge part of sustainability is trying to get as many resources as you can locally. Because, of course, if you're getting resources from very, very far away, it means that they have to be shipped here, and that takes energy, it takes fossil fuels. Part of being sustainable and doing that is to try and find things locally and to try and work with the resources that we have right here.
Could you maybe comment a little bit on some of the people you worked with on the show?
So, I was racking my brains last night trying to remember in the early days the names of some people. Terrible. But I know that there was a young man who lived in the Lord Selkirk Park developments, who was also a technician. So we brought him in, and his name slips my mind. But Joan Hay was a key player on the show. She was a co-host actually for many years. So she and I eventually would take turns. Like she would take 1 week and then I'd take the next week, which was great because it's quite difficult, as I'm sure you know, Michael, to be constantly racking your brains for new people to bring on and ideas. Joan Hay was great. She was very helpful. And then in the latter days, Tammy Kloss came on as a co-host as well. And I'm sure I'm missing some people and I feel badly about that. But yeah, there was ins and outs of people. Joan Hay was the most consistent one. But then there's also a few others. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts about the evolution of the show from the time you started to when you ended and then beyond?
Well, for one thing, I have to say, I really thought, the show is going to die when I had to leave because we really couldn't figure out at that time who would take it on. But I don't know who actually approached Michael Champagne, but that was a brainwave for sure. I think he takes it a whole nother level. I mean, he and Jenna, I think he often comes on with Jenna-licious. My intent was always to help people who live in the inner city share their stories. Well, they are people in the inner city, and they just are just really natural, I think, at that. So it's been a really good evolution, I think.
You're listening to Inner City Voices on CKUW 95.9.
Real issues.
Real people.
Real Stories. I'm Jovan Lotus.
I'm Michael Redhead Champagne.
And I'm Cameron McLean. They're a group that meets at the West Central Women's Resource Center, and it's all about women coming together and sharing their experiences, sharing common experiences, and setting goals for themselves and for their community in order to try to move forward some of the issues that they deal with on a day-to-day basis. And Angela, your group selected a specific topic to focus on as a community goal. What was the topic and what was the goal?
Well, we were focused on CFS and all the abuses going on with Child and Family Services, and also because when children are apprehended, then almost always, the parent, usually it's the mother, loses her home if she's living in Manitoba housing, say. She's forced to move into a smaller place because if she's on EIA, it won't pay. Like, welfare does not pay for the extra rooms that she would need for her child or children. So she's forced to relocate. She's already traumatized from having her children ripped out of her arms, and now she's got an extra burden of finding a new location.
It's me, Michael Redhead Champagne. Thank you so much, Michael, for doing this. This is a really awesome feature.
Yeah. Inner City Voices goes way, way back.
And long before me.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you got involved and, what the focus was at the time and maybe how things might have shifted under your tenure?
Sure. I think I was approached, I feel like, what was it, 2011-ish, from Cameron McLean. And I remember giving recently an interview to Stylist Magazine at the University of Winnipeg here. And I mentioned the story, and he was misquoted in the story as Cameron McQueen, which is kind of an exciting, little bit of an interesting mistake there. But Cameron approached me on Twitter, social media, and said, "Hey, I'm on a Inner City Voices radio show with Joan Hay." She was the other co-host at the time. And the idea at the time was to have, usually between two and three hosts taking turns to making sure that we are highlighting what's going on in the inner city. And so something that is an interesting thing about the evolution, I would say, of Inner City Voices is that we have a habit of losing our hosts to professional media careers. And so, I mean, I know Cameron is now over at CTV, and I know Adisawa, who once I took over hosting, did a little awesomeness over in MTV Africa. It's just been a very interesting kind of situation. Yeah, so the evolution, I guess, of Inner City Voices from that time until now is that now Inner City Voices, whereas I think it used to be a little bit more news focused, like a traditional news show, kind of profiling folks in the inner city. I feel like we still do both of those things, but I just think the way in which it's done has changed, and just kind of with the style of the people that are involved, it evolves to those people's styles. So I know now we have a pretty conversational hour-long show. It used to be once a week for half an hour. Now it's once every 2 weeks for 1 hour. So it gives us the same amount of time, just shuffled around. So it's great to have that one whole full hour to spend with the folks out there in Radio Land. And now we are able to highlight different folks in the inner city. We do a lot of random just recording things on our phone and then playing those interviews here because we want to get that authentic feeling of the inner city on the airwaves. So that's something that's important for us. We also really encourage folks just to give us a call too. So it's fun for us to be taking those phone calls from people, and we never know what they're going to say, but this is Inner City Voices. This is their show. So whatever they say is what it's meant to be.
Monday, July 1st, 7 days ago, was Canada Day. It's true. It was Canada Day, and I know that a lot of folks in and around Winnipeg's inner city have different types of feelings and opinions around how we feel around Canada Day, and I thought that it was important for me to, of course, mention what the heck I was doing on Canada Day, because guess what? I wasn't hanging around in the North End. I actually left the North End so that I could go and spend time with one of our friends and frequent people that we play here on Inner City Voices, Daryl Buck. That's right. I was able to go and support him and the awesomeness that he is able to bring to folks. He was invited by Manitoba Music, and I think that is very exciting that Manitoba Music is engaging hand drum singers like Daryl Buck in addressing things like Canada Day. And so I know for me, I really appreciated having that space and time and opportunity to share what some of my thoughts were around Canada Day. For me, I think it's important for us to listen to everyone. And while I was right there with everyone at the Forks while we were having celebrations and partying and talking about all of the awesomeness that is Canada Day, I felt a responsibility to explain in between round dance songs a little bit about why many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit people use Canada Day as an opportunity to protest.
Could you talk then about what you've perceived, what you've heard, what you've experienced in terms of the impact, the importance of the show to people in community?
Well, I know that in the years that I've been on the show, it's been really exciting to include and interview folks that are really making a big difference in disrupting kind of negative systems in the inner city. There's a lot of poverty, there's a lot of addiction, there's a lot of challenges. And we've been trying to feature some of those people that are those good kind of troublemakers that are disrupting some of those negative cycles from happening. And it's been exciting to watch some people that have come onto our show and say, this is my first time being on a media interview, eventually go on to work and do different types of media work. I know I always like to pick on Leonard Bunkman, who now works over at CBC as well. And so again, another problem of losing our people to professional media. And so I think really what this is showing people in the inner city, especially in recent years with those jumps from a place like CKUW to professional media, is that participating in places like Inner City Voices on CKUW not only gives us a platform to talk about what's happening in our own voice, in our own words, in our own time, in our own space, but it also provides opportunity for us to jump off into who knows what else, whether it's working in professional media or whether it's continuing to work in community. And so it's been really exciting to see that evolution. And I have no idea what's going to happen in the future, because the inner city is such an ever changing, ever evolving space that I feel like that's the nature of the show, how it always needs to be. It's like always going to adapt.
It seems to be playing like a fostering, nurturing role along that that path.
Yeah, and that's a big thing as well, right? I invite a large group of folks into Inner City Voices that aren't necessarily all trained up in all of our necessary things to be a formal host here at CKUW. But I think in inviting those folks into the space, getting them familiar, getting them comfortable with being inside of the university, being inside of a radio show, and also having their voice broadcasted, it really helps them with their public speaking, with the messaging that they want to get out there, but also helps just kind of sharpen them up in general for the tough work that a lot of folks in the inner city do. I think my favorite experience, it's like a recurring experience that happens on Inner City Voices. We have musical breaks. And I think something that has happened before, I remember another funny evolution is that there used to be a Marvin Gaye song that was the introduction for Inner City Voices called Inner City Blues, right? And the instrumental version of that, and it's very kind of jazzy and it's nice, it's chill. But now, since we've taken over, we use different Boogie the Beat electronic powwow step songs every week to open our show. And so it just creates a totally different energy. And it's so exciting to be able to do such a thing, right? Because we're highlighting all these things that people in the inner city love, and they're getting really... people are really participating, and I feel like this has become a safe place to mentor young voices to learn how to kick butt and out there in media land.
Michael Champagne, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Inner City Voices continues to air every second Monday on CKUW 95.9 FM, starting at 5 p.m. The next long-running show we will be profiling is System Kids, the program which gives youth in and from the child welfare system a positive outlet for speaking out and educating the general public about their experiences in care. After nearly a year in development, original host Amy Zylstra, then coordinator of Voices, Manitoba's Youth and Care Network, managed to get the show to air on July 3, 2002. I managed to track down her successor, both as coordinator at Voices and as host of the program, to get her thoughts about the show.
This is System Kids on CKUW 95.9 FM, bringing the issues of youth in and from care from their lives to your minds. Live on Mondays at 6 p.m., rebroadcasted Wednesdays at 4.
Thanks for joining us here on System Kids today. My name is Marie. I'm the coordinator of Voices, Manitoba's Youth and Care Network. And today I have a very special co-host. Say hi.
Hello.
And what's your name?
My name is Shelley.
Oh, well, you are a sweet thing, Shelley. Tell me, what gives you the right to be here today?
What gives me the right? Besides being a youth in care, I am your sister.
Well, there you go. So, you guys, this is a very special co-host. Treat her with much respect and much love, of course.
My name is Marie Christian. I'm the director here at Voices, Manitoba's Youth and Care Network. And Voices is a network for young people in and from care across the province. We engage, equip, and empower young people. We want them to have a sense of belonging, a sense of community, and to know their rights and how to speak up for themselves.
Now, you had hosted the show for a few years. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about some of the challenges and the opportunities that came along with that role?
Sure. The opportunities were great. Hearing everyone's stories, having the opportunity to interview everyone from young people in care all the way up to child welfare professionals and foster families, to allies and people who work with youth or provide services to youth. It was a great opportunity to learn and to become more aware of resources available to young people, as well as just to get their stories out there. We did a whole series on just young people's stories and learning how to share their stories safely. Some of the challenges, of course, is that nervousness that comes with being on the radio. So you'll have a guest say they'll be there and maybe not show up. So you get to ad lib for an hour, which is quite awkward. But I think the benefits far outweigh the challenges.
What kind of, shall we say, feedback did you get, from participants, but also from the wider community?
We've always received a lot of great feedback from young people who've participated. They found it to be a very healing experience to share their story, to know that they've been heard. We've had young people who, although they came on anonymously and kind of changed some of the names in their story, they were still heard by, like for one example in particular, she was heard by her foster family that was no longer taking care of her, and it offered them the opportunity to reunite. So that was just really impactful for that young woman especially. We've had young people have the opportunity to just grow in that way, and they've all come back and been really thankful for the opportunity. We got feedback all the way from, I think it was Mexico. Someone sent an email. They listened online and they just really appreciated the show. So we won a few different awards from the station and from Campus and Community Radio. And we inspired the Advocates Office in Ontario to work with a group of their young people to start their own radio show. So it's been really impactful, not only to us here in Manitoba, but seemingly at least across Canada and in Mexico.
Do you feel that you had the supports you needed to make the transition from living up north to moving to Winnipeg and being on independent living? Do you feel that your teachers or your social worker or...
Oh, no, not at all. No. No. My social worker was just a disaster. She probably didn't know her left and right foot from each other. It was terrible. I'd call her and she wouldn't call me back for weeks, and she'd tell me things, and she ended up lying about certain things in documents, and it came in court papers, and she had made statements that I had made, supposedly, that I had not made. So she really kind of... What is that, perjury? That's perjury, isn't it?
I think so. Either that or slander or libel or something.
Yeah.
What?
I should sue them.
Well, what kind of statements?
Well, it's things that I said about my father. I mean, I told her some things, but she said that I had said that my father was the worst father in the entire world, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. this and this about my mom, and you know, those things were not true. So,
what was the truth? Why weren't you allowed to go there and represent yourself?
I didn't know I could.
Did she talk to you about your rights?
No.
I mean, after the age of 12, you're allowed to get your own lawyer and represent yourself, or have yourself represented in court.
No. I think they do that for a purpose. I think their whole thing about not having you establish your own rights or establish your own freedom in that type of aspect is for them to gain more responsibility over you and be able to make decisions for you. Because maybe it's a bit easier. There's a lot of things I learned in living in foster care. When I met up with Voices, I learned a lot of other things that I had not known, which is really kind of trippy, because it's like they put you in this place and they tell you they're just trying to be good to you and trying to do things for you, when they're not really. They're kind of hurting you more than they would.
Where did it all begin for you?
Well, back when I was 13, I was living in Saskatchewan with my mother. And things didn't go over too well. There were just situations at home. So I decided to pack up my bags and leave. I had a stepfather, and I did not get along with him at all. But from what I remember, he was somewhat abusive towards my mother. Like, there was days where my mom would come and cry on the edge of my bed because he would have slapped her and went and took off in the car. And she'd hear me crying because my room was across the hall from theirs. And she'd come and she'd cry with me until I'd fall asleep. I couldn't stand seeing her so broken and hurting. And the very next day, it was like nothing happened, and don't talk about the night before because you don't want to bring that up. I really hated it, and it was just getting me down, seeing my mom down. So I told her that it was either him or me, and she didn't choose me, so I took off the next day. I packed my bags and left on a Greyhound from Saskatchewan to Steinbach.
Well, System Kids is it's a part of Voices. Voices is the Youth and Care Network here in Manitoba, as you know.
Yeah.
And we have System Kids so that kids who are in and from foster care and group homes can come and talk about their experiences or just have some time on the radio to share whatever it is that they want to share.
Okay.
And I heard that you have a really awesome talent to share.
Yeah.
Do you want to give us a piece of that?
Okay.
Okay.
It's a small world, in a small life we're living. This rap I will give you is for you to listen, to respect all races. Yeah, and to respect each other's faces. Yeah, 1, 2, 3. Take it from me. The reason I want this is so we can just be ourselves and not something else. Cause man, that is not possible. We need to do something like jump over that obstacle. I'm being clearer than possible. But if I stop now, we'll have war and we'll end up in the hospital. We need to make a creation. Like, make this world become a giant nation for every country to have peace. Peace on earth for you and me.
Awesome. Good.
Thank you.
Another one?
Okay. Hey man, don't hide, in the darkness and go inside. Hey man, don't stare at the window, just come out there. No one's stopping.
Are there any
you,
memorable moments from your time with the show that you'd like to share with our listeners, whether it was a show moment or a guest that really sticks with you all these years later?
Oh gosh, so many of the young people have left a big impact on me listening to their stories, or when we did that one series pre-recording and like listening back and trying to enhance their story with music or whatever else. There's one in particular, two sisters who shared their experience of being in care and needing to build community. And just the honesty with which they shared their story. And like one sister in particular was talking about
the need to ask for advice and to seek help with mental health. And the other sister just was very honest and supportive, but they came to this shared conclusion that it's really important to not only rely on your siblings or the people closest to you, but at some point you need to reach out for professional help. And just the way that they came across that, the way that they had that conversation and came to that conclusion was really sweet and really honest. And there were a lot of stories. There were a lot of really interesting interviews. There was one interview with this person who had an agenda that we did not realize in pre-screening, and it just went off the rails, and it was so weird, and I can't remember particularly what their agenda was, but I remember we were kind of looking at each other like, oh my gosh, this is a mess. How do we shut this down? It had nothing to do with child welfare, but that was their misleading angle to get onto the show. So win some, lose some. Thankfully, we've won most and only had a few really weird encounters.
Is there anything you could say about the evolution of the show from its earliest origins to what it's become today?
I think it's evolved really well. Like I said, it started with our prior coordinator, Amy, by herself interviewing young people or child welfare professionals. And now we have Dustin and Amy as a team co-hosting, bringing rights information, bringing the voices of youth and child welfare professionals, and just that dynamic that they bring. They're both so such well-spoken people. Amy brings that experience of the child welfare system and her experience as an educator. Dustin brings his experience of just being a really passionate and outspoken kind of guy.
I want to continue the segment with you. It's one of our favorites. And I was just wondering if you could reintroduce yourself.
Sure.
And your office.
Yeah.
And what is it that you bring to the show, Ainsley?
Well, so my name is Ainsley Crone, and I currently serve as the Deputy Advocate for Children and Youth here in Manitoba, and I work at the Manitoba Advocate for Children and Youth Office. We used to be called the Office of the Children's Advocate, but as of March of this year, all of that changed, including our name. And so I've been at the office there for almost 10 years. And like we were just saying, you know, I think that I've been working with you guys on this show off and on for about 5 years or so. For those people who don't know about our office, we serve to listen to the voices of young people in multiple public systems here in Manitoba. We amplify the rights of children, and we ensure that people that are charged with the responsibility of delivering services to those young people are doing so with an understanding of what the needs of young people are and that they're responding to different issues in the province. So we have an advocacy function, so we work directly with young people and on their behalf that are currently involved with public services. We also have the responsibility for investigating the deaths of children and young adults who have been involved with public services before they died. We do research on issues that are important to children and families, and we do a whole bunch of outreach and different things like that to raise issues about what's happening for young folks in Manitoba.
Incredibly important work going on at the office, slightly even more important than the work that we do here on the show, talking about issues that matter to young people in and from care. But those things are aligned. They're
absolutely.
They're the same. They're one and the same. Yeah.
We all live on the spectrum, on the continuum.
That's
together.
Right. And we have a very special role in that piece of the pie in introducing people mm-hmm. to the office and letting them know everything that you do. I think that a lot of people listening to the show maybe aren't too familiar with the work of the Manitoba Advocate. And this is just a great way to get them to know about it.
And I think it's just created this environment where young people want to be a part of it. So I think it's evolved really well, and I'd like to see where it goes next.
System Kids, featuring hosts Dustin Rogers and Amy Comas, continues to air on CKUW every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. My name is Michael Welch, and over the past several weeks, we've been profiling vintage CKUW spoken word programs. We just heard retrospectives on the show System Kids. Now, from the other end of the age spectrum, we will be hearing from some of the voices from the senior show, 2000 and Counting, Older and Wiser. This program, like Inner City Voices, was among the very first spoken word programs appearing on CKUW's schedule from the month the station went to air. Some notable Winnipeg personalities have been featured on the program. One of the very first contributors was writer, essayist, and playwright Margaret Ulrich. She would appear on the program between 2000 and 2008 before hosting the award-winning CKUW show Better Than Chocolate. Here she is appearing on a special Christmas 2002 edition of 2000 and Counting.
Hi, this is Marge Ulrich. After Sam played the Hanukkah songs, he was relaxing in the studio and decided to play Silent Night, a simple melody that touches him. His warm rendition brought out all of the feeling the composers must have felt when they created it. I'm so glad he had the time to perform it for us. For those who don't know the story, Silent Night was written in the 19th century because of a problem. In a small Austrian church, the organ was broken and couldn't be repaired in time for the Christmas Eve Mass. So, in a couple of hours, Joseph Moore and Franz Gruber created a simple song that could be played on the guitar. It was called The Song from Heaven. On Christmas Eve in 1914, the German soldiers singing Silent Night brought a touch of humanity to the First World War. The British soldiers responded with the First Noel, and for a few hours, peace returned. It truly was the song from heaven. I hope you're having a peaceful, blessed Christmas. We've pre-recorded our two holiday shows, and it's been an education. Normally, we do our shows live, and as you know, we do make mistakes. With pre-recording, we've been able to correct our mistakes and almost get up to professional quality. But maybe that's the problem in modern life. We see TV shows and films that have had dozens of retakes. Sometimes they show the bloopers, and it's pretty funny to see that even big stars can make mistakes. But what we usually see is a smoothly running show where everyone always says the right thing, the dinner is cooked to perfection, and everybody's hugging each other in a half an hour. It can leave one feeling like he's been cheated, or that he should try harder to make things perfect. Well, let's remember, the first Christmas was a real stinker. For anyone who's ever traveled, being in a strange city with no available rooms is not fun. Add to that the young woman is about to have her first baby. And for the topper, the local government in those pre-civil rights days wants to kill the baby. Can it get much worse? At holiday times, people get homesick and remember those who are no longer with them. If this is your first holiday after a major change, you're in my prayers. Be gentle with yourself. Do what will make it better for you. Change is hard. Our first married Christmas was a big change. We're originally from New York City. I come from a huge family, and there we were, just the two of us, in a basement apartment in Surrey, British Columbia. Perry Como's Christmas special was an old tradition for us. When we watched it, it helped to know our folks were watching it too. For an hour, we were all together. But when we awoke on Christmas Day, we heard our puppy splashing in water. The drainage ditch had been plugged and we'd been flooded. Neighbors helped us empty our apartment into theirs. Things were going smoothly, sort of, when we heard our phone ringing. There was still 2 feet of water in our apartment. We braved the icy water and risk of electrocution to answer the phone and wish our folks a Merry Christmas. What would have been the point of worrying them? Perry Como's specials are just a memory now, but thanks to tapes, for the next few minutes we can share a Christmas moment from the past. And I hope you have a Merry, Merry Christmas.
2000 and Counting typically featured an ensemble of four or more individuals, all seniors, who would present topics of interest among older Manitobans, often with guests from the broader community. The main host would present on behalf of the collective and choose the topic for that week. This duty would rotate among a collective, almost all of whom would appear in each episode. Those early contributors included John Buchanan, Paul Hagen, Sophie Colt, Nurit Drury, Margaret Ulrich, Sam Kanacker, Diane Gordon, and Louise Wilmot.
thank you for coming, and welcome to our radio station again.
Thank you.
Hope to see you again in the future, and you'll give us an update on how things are going
at
MSOS. Thank you, Laurie. And now, Season of Mists and Mellow Fruitfulness. Your love of poetry and nature seems to be captured in this poem by Keats, John. What's your take on that?
Well, before I get into that, Sophie, I suddenly realize I'm living in the year 2004. Why, I know I accidentally entered my password in the microwave. And I haven't played solitaire with real cards in years. And I have a list of 15 phone numbers to reach my family of three. And when I pull up in the driveway, I use my cell phone to see if anyone is home. And when I get up in the morning, I go online before getting my coffee. That lets me know I'm living in the year 2004. But enough of that. To autumn, season of mists and mellow fruitfulness. I love autumn. I was wandering in Kildonan Park yesterday taking photographs, and I love when the leaves turn yellow and red, and when the sunlight shows through the leaves and they seem to come alive and glow. And the pond at Kildonan Park was full of ducks beginning to collect, ready to head off south. Lots of wood ducks, and just lovely. And I love the crunch and the sound of leaves when you walk in the fall. And I love that cool briskness of the wind when it blows. It's so refreshing and enlivening. And autumn is also a very thoughtful time. It's a time that's part of one of the natural cycles of life, and where there's a little more behind you than in front of you. Spring and summer have passed, and autumn and winter is ahead. And that makes me think of my own life too, because that's exactly where I am. I'm in the autumn of my life. And like the trees, lots of my leaves have fallen. You just have to look at the top of my head. There's not many leaves left. And in some ways, I've been bitten by the frost. Everything doesn't just quite function like it once did. So in a way, autumn is a season of very mixed emotion. Autumn is a sad season, because a season that heralds the end of a cycle. But it's also a jubilant season, a season that pays the rewards for spring and for summer, a season of fruitfulness. Oh, I might as well read a bit of Keats now when I mention fruitfulness. Ode to Autumn, season of mists and mellow fruitfulness, close-bosomed friend of the maturing sun, conspiring with him how to load and bless with fruit the vines that round the thatch eaves run.
By early 2005, Bill Lisak and Thomas Kyle would join the collective. Bill would continue presiding over the show, while other members would drift away to focus on other pursuits. He is fondly remembered for his passion for radio, his friendly engagement with all members of the CKUW community, myself included, and his interest in all aspects of the station. The Bill Lisak Award, one of the volunteer achievement awards given out by the station every year, was created in his honor after his passing in 2012. Here's Bill hosting a November 13th, 2006 edition of the show.
Each week, a different member of the 2000 and counting radio team acts as the host. As host, he or she chooses a topic for discussion, and the other members can talk on that topic or choose a topic of their own. As host for today, I've chosen the topic, What Have You Done Since You Retired? Well, I'll start out with a short piece that I wrote on this topic, and then others will present their offerings. When I was preparing for retirement, I was looking forward to my wife and I visiting our favorite place, which is, of course, Disneyland and Disney World, and for myself, reading a lot of books that I had not read. We did get to spend a good deal of time at Disney, but I haven't read all the books that I wanted to read. In fact, I have only read one, I think. And since my wife passed away, I've gotten myself involved in a number of volunteer activities, which of course takes up my time and prevents me from doing the reading that I intended to do after I retired. I find myself now busier than I was when I was working. I sometimes wonder how I got all the necessary things done around the house when I was working. I have probably acquired that Mexican disease called manana since I retired. Anyhow, getting back to what my wife and I did after I retired. As I said, we did spend a lot of time in Florida, and while there, we visited the Disney theme parks and volunteered at Kids Village. Kids Village is a complex consisting of approximately 100 regular-sized 2- and 3-bedroom houses, a restaurant, a castle, a swimming pool, and a number of play areas. Families with children with life-threatening diseases are brought there, all expenses paid, and housed and fed for a week. They are also provided with passes for all the Disney parks, SeaWorld, and Universal Studios, and they are supplied with transportation and a video camera. My wife and I usually worked in the ice cream parlor, doling out what we considered fantastic sundaes. We also worked in the restaurant as servers and buspersons. And shortly after we returned from our last trip to Florida, my wife passed away. Since that happened, I've been involved with this program and the Saturday Morning Wake-Up program, both of which have been very helpful in helping me to get over the loss of my wife. For that, I thank all the members of this program, for including me as part of their group. And I would also like to thank the station for allowing me to get involved in a number of activities at the station. In addition to my involvement at CKUW, I also do VoicePrint, which is a program where we read daily newspapers for the blind and persons who have trouble reading the printed word. The program is broadcast daily over the audio portion of cable TV. I also am editor of the City of Winnipeg Retirees Association newsletter and contribute to the UGG Retirees Association newsletter. And I'm chairman of the Seniors and Elders Day Committee, which fortunately only meets once a month, but does require some work between meetings. I also meet once a month for lunch with 3 different groups on 3 different days. So generally I'm kept quite busy, which is good, but I still haven't attained my pre-retirement objective of reading some of my books. And that's what I have to say about my life after retirement. And now, I think it's Nurit that we have coming up next to give us her opinion on life and that sort of thing. Is that right, Nurit?
My opinion on life. Well, I do write, you know, and I find that that's a real help in whatever it is you're trying to solve, from problems to just writing down your what you saw or what you heard or whatever, your feelings, whatever. But I really didn't start writing poetry till I was about 47. So I'm now 66. So at 47, you're not really retired. But I was dealing for 40 years or more with the fact that I wasn't structured every day like the working people. So I think some working people who have no hobbies, when they retire, they, after 40 years of being structured every single day, they feel kind of lost as to what to do with the day. And it's not that they're not interested in anything or that they don't have things to do. It's that nothing is pulling them out of the house to do it, and so they have to structure their own day. And the challenging of structuring the whole day gave rise to a series of poems that I thought I would read to you. Now, some of the poetry that I write is rhymed. Those are usually more humorous. Rhymes tend to lend themselves to humor, so I really admire people who write serious humor in rhyme. I do know such people. Paul is one, and Paul writes open verse too, I know. Somehow there are fads in poetry, and you get certain parts of the population looking down on rhyming poetry, and I don't think anyone should look down on any kind of writing, because these fads that the present-day people are promoting, they're just like fashions anywhere. They go out of style. So I've read this one before, but I thought I'd read it again. This has nothing to do with structuring the day. It has to do with retirement in general. And this I wrote about a year after I started writing poetry. And it's called Time Warp. Some people my age are planning their retirement, slowing down their pace, simplifying life. But I spent my childhood wandering in the desert, 40 years of learning, 40 years a child. Now that I am smart, full of happy heart, ready for a start, I'm too old for the part. Because I was always looking for jobs. I've always worked part-time all my life. And I was still waiting for that day when I'll get this wonderful full-time job.
After that big celebration that they had for me when I was retiring, I woke up in the morning and was halfway across the room before I realized I didn't have any place to go. What a letdown. Nobody, absolutely nobody, needed me anymore. My children were all grown up and out looking after themselves. My wife was capable and competent. She had her household in order. It didn't matter to anybody whether I got up or didn't get up. And that's when I started to really think about what John and been emphasizing and Sophie have been emphasizing today. There has to be an interesting occupation that you can go in for after you retire, but it has to have some meaning to it. So I started looking around, and I felt that the only thing we could possibly do is, as Sophie is saying, start looking for some place to volunteer. Well, how they fell in. Every time you looked around, there was another place where you had some experience that you could use and you could put to use. Never, not going to benefit yourself anymore, that's what you thought, but it's going to benefit a lot of other people. I was wrong. The benefit was for me. Every single day I learned something new about the activities of those people who were gainfully employed, something far more deeper about those people who were no longer gainfully employed, but were active in what we call the volunteer world. What a tremendous world that turns out to be. If you really start to investigate what that world is like here now, we have a large portion of our, anybody over 45, 55 is volunteering in some way or another. I'm absolutely amazed when I listen to John and Sophie here of the number of different areas they have found to make themselves busy. And I can actually say I have found the same thing. Every time you turn around, there's another opportunity to assume another responsibility. And it's a necessary responsibility. It isn't provided for in the law. It isn't provided for in the financial system of things. It's provided for people who are willing to roll up their sleeves and go and do something. And that, I find, is the attitude that has made my senior years absolutely far, far superior to anything that I accomplished during my money-making years. It's a wonderful time. You keep your mind centered on what is needed, not what can I go and do to make myself famous or to bring in a lot of money. You keep your mind centered on all of these little things that are needed around. We had I've forgotten the gentleman's name who just passed away here in the city, a little while, a reverend something or other, who was the...
Oh, yes.
Larry.
Yeah, Larry. What a man, eh?
Anyway,
yeah. Actually, he had... I think he was one of these guys that came here with nothing, built himself up until he was a friend to everybody. And there's hardly a soul on the streets of the Winnipeg that doesn't know him. I guess he's going to be a funeral for him at the Calvary Temple sometime this week.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow it is. It's going to be quite a time. But I just wanted to impress that, or emphasize what has been already said around the table. There's nothing to worry about not being needed anymore. Once you have time now to decide what you can do, and not, as Narit has referred to, what would you call it, managing your day or organizing your day. I thought that was a terrific example of just what you feel is going to be a problem, but it's not.
A later show member and close friend of Bill's and CKUW, Wendy Hart, kept the show going toward the end of its run. 2000 Counting ended its 13-year radio journey in the summer of 2012. And with that, we come to the end of our own journey into our station's illustrious past. Thank you so much for joining us these past several weeks, recalling and reviewing some of the many spoken word programs on CKUW, which aired over the past 20 years. CKUW is a listener-driven radio station. If you would like to get involved with the station, produce a show, either spoken word or music, or contribute to an existing program, or get involved in some other way, please get in touch with us. Contact our volunteer coordinator, Ugona, at volunteer@ckuw.ca. We'd love to hear your feedback on this show. If there are other spoken word programs you think should get profiled in future, please send your thoughts to Program Director Sam Doucette at programming@ckuw.ca or leave a voicemail message on the office line 204-786-9782. Next week at this time, the radio stars of tomorrow will take over the airwaves with the debut of CKUW Radio Camp. We hope you'll check it out. My name is Michael Welch. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for What's Up Winnipeg, and have a great week.